Hello and welcome to Capital Ideas. This is where we sit down with members of the Majority Democratic Caucus in the Washington State House of Representatives to give listeners an inside look at important aspects of how their citizen legislature works and who and what it's working for. This time around, we're going to sit in on a conversation about education. The two voices you'll hear belong to Representative Dave Quall, a.k.a. Coach, the longtime chair of the House Education Committee, and Representative Deb Wallace, who took over the gavel in the House Higher Education Committee last session. Funding for education, from early childhood through the highest levels of graduate school, constitutes by far the fattest slice of the state's budget pie. It's also the most frequent answer given when citizens are polled on what issues matter to them most. Former Governor Gary Locke was fond of calling education the great equalizer, and most people agree that the U.S. is going to need brains, not just brawn, to crawl out of the economic hole we find ourselves in today. We started today's Capital Ideas podcast by asking Dave and Deb to introduce themselves. After that, their answers will give you a pretty good indication of what the questions were.
My name is Dave Quall. I'm a representative from the 40th District, which includes a lot of Bellingham, most of Mount Vernon, a lot of Burlington, a lot of Anacortes, and the San Juan Islands. So it's a very interesting, diverse area that I represent. For the past 12 years, I've been the chair of K-12 education. Three of those 12 years, I was co-chair, which was an interesting dynamic. And you know what we do, and it's changed a little bit in the last couple of years because we've added to the equation or the mix an appropriations education component. And that component deals, of course, with early childhood and K-12 and higher ed. So we focus more on the policy. And in years previously, we would deal with policy and flirt with the fiscal impact. But now it's more of a policy committee. And if it has a fiscal impact, then, of course, it gets co-hearing in the Appropriations Education Committee. A lot of times what comes to our minds are brought to us by our constituents. It's interesting how a person can have an idea and they share it with you and you think, well, I feel a bill coming on.
It's funny. Some people feel a cold coming on and we feel a bill coming on. I like that. I'm Deb Wallace and I'm from America's Vancouver, Washington, and I chair the Higher Education Committee. We focus on not just college and university work, but I'm going to say workforce education. So anything that is post-high school, but then we actually also reach back and coordinate and work with the K-12 committee and Chair Quall, particularly in the areas of dual credit. So that would be Running Start, college in the high school, international baccalaureate programs, advanced placement. And in fact, nearly 25% of our students in Washington State in high school take some kind of dual credit program so that they can earn college credit while they're in high school. It makes it a nice relationship between K-12, I think, and higher education so that we can coordinate and really offer more educational opportunities for the students in our state.
Well, I'm going to have to give Representative Wallace a lot of credit. She has initiated a lot of conversation to try to bring together K-12 and higher ed. Even in her dual credit legislation this year of focusing on blurring the lines between K-12 and higher ed. I think a lot of it has to do with personality and relationships. Representative Wallace and I, we've had good friendly conversations, and we respect that we need to look at education as on a continuum, all the way from early learning to higher ed. And I might also add that Representative Kagi as well. So I think there's been a rich conversation and relationship among the chairs, which is not mandated, but it has evolved in a positive way, and I think that's a good thing.
Thank you. And I think it is absolutely the relationships that matter. And as well, I don't think that most people realize some of the changes that have taken place in our House of Representatives. So, for instance, adding the Appropriations Education Committee, which Kathy Hague chairs, that is a place that the early learning chair, Ruth Kagi, Representative Quall chairing K-12, and myself chairing higher ed, and others all come together and talk about the fiscal portion and policy as well for education. And that intersection, that committee has allowed us to be, I think, more effective and to get more accomplished and to understand that intersection between policy and the fiscal aspects.
We have a constitutional responsibility to fully fund basic education. And that's really the only responsibility that has been laid out in our Constitution. And in recent months, we have had a task force looking at redefining basic education and on strategies on how to fund that. I would say in our caucus that the discussion is education, and not only getting a good education, but being more thoughtful in preparing young people for a life of work and careers and a meaningful life and connecting that. Because we know that of all those that start in higher ed, I think there's about 20% that make it all the way through for a bachelor's degree. It's in that range. And so we've got to think about that other 80%. Not just be focused on getting a baccalaureate degree, but getting career and technical education and getting associate of technical arts degrees and skill centers. And there's looking at an array of programs that give direction and hope to the young people in our schools.
I suggest to all students that graduation from high school is a waypoint and that everyone needs at least one more year of education of some type. At this point, we only have about 70% of our students actually graduating high school, and anything that we can do from early learning all the way through our kindergarten through 12th grade education to help more students to actually graduate, and when they go to some kind of post-high school education program, if they don't need remedial education, it helps everyone. It saves everyone money and time. The investment between early learning and our K-12 system is so important. It's not only our paramount duty, but it really comes down to providing a better quality of life when people have more education.
It was pointed out to me the other day that, you know, we usually use the figure that about 70% graduate on time. But it was pointed out to me, I hope this is an accurate statistic, that by the time a person is 24 years of age, that the graduation rate is more like 85%. And so a lot of times when we think of graduation, we always think of like an 18-year-old, and that there are those who are now seeing the value of going to the community college to get their high school diploma or getting the GED. But that was shared with me that in our conversation about dropouts, that we should also acknowledge that a lot of those who did drop out at age 16, 17, eventually they picked up the pace and were able to get a high school diploma.
I think that's very important, and it also shows us the need to not just cater to the 18 to 22-year-old, but for a lot of students that don't figure out for themselves what they want to do until they're 23 or 24. There's a lot of people in that category that it's important that we look at that early adult period and how to help them to reengage in education again. The role of the legislature is changing, I believe, with the four-year institutions, and that is that we are saying to them more so, we would like you to focus, for instance, on high-demand fields where there are jobs at the end. Not that it isn't important that a person get a broad education. Education for itself is good, but it also is very expensive. And we want to make sure that the state is investing its limited dollars in ways that help people to not only gain an education, but actually be able to get a job at the end. We are taking a bit more of a hands-on approach with our universities to direct some of the funding to say, we would like you to focus on those high-demand, job-oriented fields. We give our universities a lot of flexibility in the way they invest their money, but we want you to be accountable to us. We want to know what we're buying for our money.
And, you know, when you look at the high-demand perspective, we're also asking the higher ed in the schools of education to look at the high demand for classroom teachers, which is math, science, special education, English language learners programs, and asking them to focus stronger attention to those high demand needs at our public schools as well.
I'd actually like to add something here. When we think about education, we make decisions based on what we know and our point of view. And many of us in the legislature are 40 or 50 or, you know, middle age or middle age on the high side. And I think that it's important for us to look at what the younger students are needing now and the way they look at educational opportunities. So, for instance, online learning, e-learning, has grown dramatically. In fact, over the last 6 years, it's gone from 6 years ago, 6,000 students taking classes to 2 years later, 12,000, and now 6 years later, 22,000 students taking online classes in our community colleges alone. So the students are making decisions about how they want to go to school and when, and they really want to do it on their own terms. So it's kind of changing the face of education and the opportunities we have.
You know, I'm always amazed at the talent that's here in this capital. It's amazing. Nonpartisan staff for K-12, we have a staff attorney who helps draft legislation and a policy person. And I've often thought that when I observe these people, that they could be anything they would choose to be, including being a college president. They're brilliant. They're committed to what they're doing. This is almost, in many cases, a life commitment. They're very bright. They're great at doing research. And they're at your beck and call. When we're in session, they work long hours. And when we are on the floor and deliberating, they work longer hours. And they never complain. It's a phenomenal attitude that they have. And then, of course, on the partisan staff, the person who represents our caucus, she works very closely with the nonpartisan staff. So they have a good working relationship and a respectful relationship. So the talent is just pervasive here in the Capitol.
There's actually some crossover in the staff between the K-12 and the Higher Education Committee as well, particularly with our partisan budget staff, and we share a staff attorney as well.
Right.
It's created, I think, a real linkage between the two committees so that the same person knows what's happening in both committees, which has really helped.
You know, I feel like in K-12, we're about as nonpartisan as you can get. As an example, this year when we helped to negotiate the K-12 budget with Representative Haig, we had two Republicans and two Democrats. We worked together collaboratively and in agreement. In most cases, when policy issues are dealt with in our committee, it is almost a unanimous vote. I work with Representative Priest, who is very connected with K-12 education. And on our committee, on the Republican side, we have a former superintendent, we have a former principal, we have a former teacher, we have a former school board member. So we have people who are rich in their background with education. And so it's really kept the tone without acrimony, which is a good thing.
On the Higher Education Committee, we also are a very bipartisan committee. The budget work that we've done, we did the same thing with two Republicans and two Democrats, and it was a very collaborative effort. And in fact, the real issues may come up more between when the legislation leaves the House, the conversation with what happens in the Senate.
Right.
And then we all work together, Republicans and Democrats, to go work the Senate on issues that we believe are important.
We're trying to get through this next biennium, which is a challenge. And we are also planning for the future. We have faith and belief that the economy will recover. And when it recovers, that we'll be able to do some of the good things that we would like to have done this biennium. We are going to receive some help from the federal government. We've got some stimulus dollars, and it should help in K-12 to alleviate some of our concerns. But one thing that we have done on the budget, we have scrubbed the budget to the point of if an allocation of dollars doesn't go to the classroom, directly to the classroom, we're setting that aside temporarily for the next couple of years so that we can focus all of the dollars that are available so that it'll go right to the classroom, right to the classroom teacher, and hopefully save many of the jobs that could go away, especially with the $728 going down considerably. So we've got an eye to the future, an optimistic eye, but we're also realistic, know that there are going to be great challenges for this biennium.
The budget picture for the House and for higher education is we're looking at cuts in the neighborhood of 20% before the economic stimulus money comes back from the federal government. However, we've got a tool that helps us, and that, or a roadmap, actually, and that is for the first time last year we adopted a strategic master plan for higher education, and that helps to guide us over the next 10 years for the kinds of outcomes we need to help more students gain greater education. And we're talking in the area of four-year degrees. We need 40,000 more students obtaining a four-year degree within the next 9 years, and that's 40,000 per year. So we have a lot of growth. And with the kind of budget cuts we're talking about, it makes it much more difficult. We're doing some strategic work to identify in the budget programs where the institutions, the 2 and 4 year institutions, will come forward with programs that we would fund based on their showing us what the outcomes would be, showing us what kind of results they expect. So we're kind of changing some of our investments to say, we don't want to just give you the money. We want to give you the money and ask you to invest it in areas where there are jobs that need to be filled and in areas where you would be competitive with the other institutions because we have limited funding. We think that that actually should be done regardless of the budget situation to wisely invest limited state dollars. And we're working very closely with the institutions to do that.
Well, I have really appreciated working with Representative Wallace. It's been a good, positive working relationship, and I appreciate her thoughtfulness of issues that she's brought before our committee, and specifically the dual credit issue and her involvement. And she has helped me to think of education being not separate entities of K-12 and higher ed, but of looking at it in this totality. I think that she's been a good mentor in that regard to me.
Well, and it goes the same direction back because the coach, Representative Quall, has, with his experience in education and an attitude, he has an attitude to look at how things could be done to help students. He's always has the student at the center, and that has made all of the difference, and he is very approachable. And so I think we have a great team to help more students.
That's today's program. Subscribe to this podcast now and spend a few minutes a week with Capital Ideas. After all, this is your state government, and the more you know about how it works, the better it can work for you. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats. Thanks for listening. Class dismissed.